Good morning, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. You look smart today, eh? Are you, you know, neatly shaved and well dressed and...
No, thank you so much.
Are you being called up by the president for a new job or what?
Well, yeah, no. I'm at home in Durban. I hope the network is not going to give me some challenges like it does when I'm in your province.
Yeah, I did that up, I think it was fiber now in the Western Cape, so fiber.
Oh, I see. Then we'll be fine. I have fiber here at home.
Yeah, fiber is a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. I mean, it's chocolate cheese. I agree with you. Colleagues, let me welcome all of you. Brian, how are we doing in terms of quorum?
We are still missing two members in order to make a quorum.
Is it?
Yes.
All right. Who do I see there? I see Chembu. I see Modise. Just the three of us so far. Oh, I see Mr. Murray. Two, three, four. You are right. You are right. And
let me call some of our members over the phone.
Please do. This is an unusual slot. Our slot is Wednesday, and this slot was necessitated by the delayed tabling of annual reports that we have to process all of them this week, so that we reserve a day next week to consider and adopt our B2R. So it's going to be a busy week, considering that we also have an oversight visit to the borderline. As a follow-up on previous concerns raised by the members of the public and about the challenges of our borders. It's been reported that the integrity of our borderline it's been challenged, and as a portfolio committee we have to go out and see for ourselves so that when we come back to discuss we have the first hand information of what's going on the border. It was reported previously that to provide effective border safeguarding, borderline safeguarding, we need 22 companies or unit or subunits, but our budget can only afford 15. So we're 7 short. I'm not saying that is the sole reason why our borderline integrity is challenged. We'll see that when we get there. There was also an amount of about 225 million rand that Treasury made available over the MTF period. mainly to facilitate the acquisition of equipment and technology to beef up security along the border. We don't know how much of that has been utilized thus far, but we'll get the report when we deal with the department this week or next week. That money became available, through the adjustment budget? Was it through the adjustment budget or early? I think it was early this year. But of course, it's money over the MTF period. Too leaky, but still something, considering the challenges we are facing on the board. So over the weekend, we'll be flying over, moving from the Bateridge Waterkloof Air Force Base to Bateridge, right to Komati Port, to Kossi Bay, and back to Pretoria. So we'll be overseeing those bases using two SADF aircraft flying low, so that we can have a view along the border. Yeah, colleagues, so that's the weekend, starting from the 27th, that's Friday, right up until Sunday late. So that's a program for this week. And next week, we are meeting again on Wednesday to consider the BRRR. The department said it's not available this week. DOD, not that they're not available this week, they said they need time to prepare for the committee, to prepare the presentation, the briefing on their annual report. So they thought today was doesn't give them sufficient time, and this week it's quite packed for them. And they requested we move their briefing to next week, Wednesday. So making our program a bit tight, because we preserved Wednesday for the consideration and adoption of the BXLR. So we rely much on our support team to produce a draft based on the information that is already available.
Yes, is there no way that the DOD could have come next Tuesday?
Next Tuesday?
Yeah, I'm just asking because we are meeting today, and I was just thinking if DOD, if it's possible for them to present next Tuesday, then it will give us that extra day for the report and the information for the report to be adopted the next Wednesday.
No, Brian, how possible that is? Can we, you see, before we invited them, Mr. Mare, we had to request to sit today because it's an extra day. We had to follow the approval processes. We got the day and then we communicated to them and they said, yes, you can take the briefing from the AG, but you are not available. Now, Brian, can we go back to and seek for an extra day Tuesday? Even if we do it in the evening, because it's clear we can't get a DOD anytime this week.
Chair, we can attempt to request approval. I'm not sure because as we when the last we spoke, Chair, we indicated that we'll call them on the Wednesday. They will come with us on the Wednesday. That will be adopted. So I can go back and check if we can then move that to the Tuesday.
I think Chair, it will just give us a better position to consider that, and obviously also then our supporting staff to incorporate whatever we have got to contribute. Otherwise, you know, because DOD is the primary principle that we are having oversight over, and then it's actually the least time that we have to consider that and to build that into the report. But that's just an idea. Thank you very much.
No, that's fine. We'll consider that, Mr. Murray. At least it will give us an extra day to look into their report as well as their replies to our questions to them. Produce a report on Wednesday. We will look at that at the end of this meeting. Brian, can you do this? Whilst you are still on this, I can see we now have the quorum. Can you beam up the program so that we start with it? It's a few minutes. Request few minutes from the AG's team.
What do you say?
Okay, let me open the meeting first. Let me declare the meeting open and welcome everyone present at this meeting. This is the revised program to accommodate the late arrival of the annual reports, so that we are able to consider and adapt our report, our habitual report next week. Okay, so right now we're dealing with consideration and adoption of the revised program. All right, this revised program is the first item today, being the 24th, is a briefing by the Auditor General for the DOD, DMV, Department of Defense, Department of Military Veterans, Arms Corps, and Cape Castle Board, and on their findings and audit outcomes on the financial and non-financial performance of the departments and the entities for 2019-20 financial year. So that's a briefing today. And then tomorrow, it's Wednesday, we are inviting DMV, Arms Corps, and Cape Castle Board, Castle Control Board, right, these three entities to brief us on their annual reports for the financial year 1920. And then there's a possibility of us looking at the minutes, that is if time permits. Right, then on the next week, Wednesday, is briefing by DOD, and then consideration of and adoption of the BHR report, and the consideration of the outstanding minutes. And we hope by then we would have produced a draft first-term program for 2021. So, colleagues, this is the revised program. And then there's now a suggestion that we possibly get a Tuesday on the 1st. Either during the day or late to consider the DOD report. In other words, to move the DOD report on Tuesday, the 2nd, to the 1st. of December. We will try to check the possibility of that. But I agree, doing it a day before gives us, adequate time to do justice to our report. Is that as it may, colleagues? Do I get your concurrence? Do you adopt this report, this program?
Yes, I support with that possibility of Tuesday. Yes, thank you, sir.
Yes, thank you so much. It's moved with that possibility. And any seconder?
I second, sir.
Thank you so much, Mutise. And all right, now let's go back to check the briefing by the Auditor General. And let me introduce the Auditor General team. Present in the meeting is Mr. Lawrence Van Vuren, is the business executive. Is Ms. Mbali Tsotetsu, deputy business executive. Mr. Soli Gianni, senior manager. And Mr. Edward Kutsie, is another senior manager. And Songezo Makagula, and the stakeholder liaison manager. So this is the AG delegation for today.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure to welcome them to this briefing session. And I now, without much ado, request them to take the platform. Mr. Van Vuren, over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present the audit outcomes for the defense portfolio to you today. Ms. Valitsi will be doing the presentation, and then after the presentation, we will be taking questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mbali Tsotetsi. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Chair, and members of the committee and all the colleagues joining this meeting. Thanks again for the opportunity to present the audit outcomes for the defense and military veterans portfolio. We start off with our mandate as the Auditor General. We exist to strengthen this country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through the audit work that we are doing, and thereby building the public confidence. So today is one of those sessions wherein we are enabling oversight by providing you as the committee the outcomes of the entities in this portfolio. We also just briefly indicate our role as Auditor General in terms of the reporting process. So we are reflecting on our audit work that we've done for the 1920 financial year, importantly the audit outcomes, so that we assist the portfolio committee in its oversight role of looking at the performance of the entities. So our annual audit looks at three areas in terms of the Public Audit Act. We look at the financial statements to ensure that the entities have fairly presented their financial affairs for the year under review, meaning that there were no significant misstatements in those financial statements presented in the annual report. We also look at reliability and credibility of the performance information, which then goes into the annual report. And lastly, we look at compliance with key legislation governing financial matters. Again, just to look at the outcomes that we can present once we've done our work. We start off with the green part, which talks to unqualified opinion with no findings. This one basically means that the entity was able to produce credible and reliable financial statements and there were no material misstatements that we identified in those financial statements when we were doing the review. It also means that their performance report that they submitted was reliable and useful. And lastly, that they complied with all the relevant key legislation. The next one is financially unqualified opinion with findings. This one means that the entity was able to produce financial statements without material misstatements, or they were able to correct the material misstatements. However, they still had findings on performance reporting, meaning that their performance report was not then fully reliable and useful, or it could be that they had findings on compliance with key legislation, and therefore then they were able to get an unqualified opinion on the financial statements, but had other matters that remained unresolved on compliance or performance reporting. The third one is a qualified opinion, which means that the entity then had some findings on financial statements that could not be corrected. Therefore, they could not produce credible and reliable financial statements. Then the fourth one is an adverse opinion. This one means that an entity then had so many issues around financial statements that could have resulted in a qualified opinion, but because there are so many, it basically means that we disagree with those financial statements. Hence, in that area, we will then issue an adverse opinion. The last one is a disclaimed opinion. This one basically means that the entity then was not able to support the financial statements. There was no credible documentation supporting the numbers included in the financial statements, and therefore we indicate that we cannot issue an opinion on those financial statements. In this slide, Chair, we again just highlight the colors that we are using for the opinions that I just talked to now. And you also indicate how we depict the movements between the financial years, the green arrow, the yellow, and the red. And we also then just indicate how we abbreviated the names of the entities that we are looking at, being Department of Defense, DOD, Department of Military Veterans, DMV, Arms Corporation of South Africa, Associate Limited, AMSCO, and the Castle Control Board, which we term CCB. So, listen, we always start our presentation with this accountability wall, which emphasizes that accountability is in the center of everything that the entity do. As is indicated also in our mandate, it's part of what we emphasize on when we do our work, because we want to enable accountability. I'll just run through the wheel once again shortly. Firstly, we indicate that, like I said, accountability is at the center. We start with it, but then how do you achieve that? So we say you plan properly as an entity on what you want to achieve. You budget for what you want to achieve for the particular financial year. And planning also involves procurement plans as well. So it's not only about the annual performance plans, but also extends to all other areas that will support the activities of the entity for that particular financial year. And once you've done the planning, then you get to the business of implementing those plans. But part of the implementation requires that you implement necessary controls and supervision, meaning that the department or entity must have sufficient then preventative controls to ensure that they prevent any possible irregularities or losses in their processes. Then we've got a check, meaning that all the assurance providers play their role in monitoring to ensure that the entity does indeed meet their planned targets, and that all processes are proceeding as they should, meaning that we will prevent any form of non-compliance in the processes that are implemented to achieve the set goals. Then we've got Act, which is about consequences. So once it has happened that there were some non-compliances with the policies of the entity or transgressions of legislation, then there must be a process then to implement consequences to ensure that those issues do not recur in future. And then we are saying that if entities and departments are able then to implement all of these processes then they have a better chance then of getting the better audit results, and we will be able then to implement the service delivery to better the life of our citizens. These are the audit outcomes for the portfolio over the 3 years. So we've indicated that there was an improvement for one entity in the portfolio whilst the other entities remained where they were in the previous financial year. So the main improvement was in relation to AMSCO that moved from unqualified with findings to unqualified with no findings, which is an attainment then of a clean audit. Then with DOD, they remained qualified with findings, and the main reason behind that was because they could not resolve the qualification of an irregular expenditure, which was also identified in the current year. This remains an issue also in the current year, as we identified that there were more cases of irregular expenditure that needed to be disclosed in the financial statements. Hence, then we qualified irregular expenditure. The other area of the qualification relates to the sensitive environment, which relates to the project that are sensitive, and then we are saying that as auditors, because we cannot get all the information, then there's an inherent limitation of scope because of the circumstances under which those transactions occur. The accounting officer has also included a section in the accounting officer's report to contextualize this qualification, just to also make the user be aware or understand it better. The department also had findings on compliance with legislation. The DMV also remains unqualified with findings, and this was because then action plans were not effectively implemented, and as a result, the department still had findings on the performance reporting as well as compliance with legislation. As I indicated earlier, AMSCO did improve to obtain a clean audit. And lastly, the CCB remained unqualified with findings on compliance with legislation. Chairperson, on this slide, we looked at the credibility of financial reporting. So firstly, on the first line, we assessed the submission of the financial statements by the legislative date. So this current year under review, the date for submission was extended by 2 months. It was therefore the 1st July 2020. All entities submitted their financial statements by that deadline, which is why we've got 100%. Then the next line talks to quantum of initial submission for auditing. Here we assess whether the submitted financial statements contained no material misstatements. So we're saying that for two entities, that is AMSCO and the Department of Military Veterans, their financial statements that were submitted did not contain any material misstatements. Whereas for the Cattle Control Board and DOD, then there were some material misstatements. Then the last line on the quality of final submission after auditing will reflect on whether then post the audit process were the financial statements then are clear of any material misstatements. So because the CCB corrected the errors that we identified during the audit, they were able then to have a quality set of financial statements post the audit. Hence, we are reporting the 75%, meaning that there were three entities in the end that had a good quality of financial statements. DOD is not part of that 75%, mainly because they had qualifications, like I indicated earlier, the issue of irregular expenditure. Where we are saying that it's not complete because they don't have enough processes to prevent, detect, and record all irregular expenditure in their financial statements. The other qualification, like I indicated as well, relates to the sensitive environment. When we look at the credibility of the performance reports that were submitted by the entities, again, we assess the quality of the initial submission for auditing, and we are indicating that AMSCO submitted a report that had no material errors, whereas DOD and CCB had some errors in the initial submission, but these were corrected during the audit process and post-auditing. Then they were also able to have credible reports. So the only entity then that still had material misstatements in their annual performance report was Department of Military Veterans. So in the end, they still had some findings regarding reliability of two indicators, which is the healthcare as well as on bursaries. Looking at non-compliance with legislation, we highlight key areas of non-compliance that we identified for the entities in the portfolio. So AMSCO did not have any material non-compliance that was reported in their audit report. The rest of the three entities had findings, and these are mainly in relation to the quality of the financial statements. Like I indicated, the first submission had material misstatements. Prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure for DOD and DMV. Payments to suppliers not made within 30 days. Sufficient and appropriate audit evidence for consequence management could not be obtained. And non-compliance with procurement and contract management processes, and that relates to the DOD. In the later slides, I will also highlight the key areas of non-compliance when it comes to procurement and contract management. As we do our work, we also reflect then on the internal control deficiencies that sit behind the findings that we are reporting. We group these internal controls into three key areas. We look at the role that was played by leadership. We look at the financial and performance management processes, and also look at governance. So when it comes to leadership, we were highlighting that effective leadership provided at DOD and the DMV is concerning. And the main reason for that is because we've seen that management did not move decisively to deal with issues that were raised in the prior years, and also in dealing with non-compliance with the entity's policies as well as legislation. On financial and performance management, we highlight proper record keeping in the main within the Department of Defense, because information could not be provided timely during the audit process, and in some instances it really took us to escalate to get the information to be provided. On daily and monthly controls, again highlighting DOD and DMV, because management was not implementing the necessary controls effectively to prevent errors in their financial statements in the DOD, and in the case of DMV, it was mainly on performance reporting, which is why then we had to report material findings on their performance reporting. Review and monitoring compliance was also lacking in the DOD and the DMV, and that is why then they could not prevent the instances of non-compliance with key legislation, which I had referred to in the previous slide. Risk management also remains an area of concern in the DMV, but in DOD it also requires intervention, because management, as much as they are identifying risky areas, but they are not mitigating those sufficiently. We also then reflect, Chairperson, on the assurance that is provided by key role players in the department, and also external, meaning that you also look up to the executive authority. So we start off with senior management as part of the first level of assurance. We reflect that on the DOD and DMV, senior management could not provide assurance, and that is mainly because when you look at the internal controls that they are supposed to implement, as I indicated in the previous slide, they were not able to do so. They did not also deal with errors or issues coming from the prior years. So as a result, we reflected that then they haven't provided assurance. On the accounting officer side, for DNB, we're saying they provided some assurance. There was some movement in terms of dealing with the issues, but some still remain. On the DOD side, because of the number of recurring issues that we are reporting, we're saying that the accounting officer has not provided assurance. Executive authority, we indicated that they have provided some assurance on the DOD and the DMV because there are certain matters that must still be attended to by the executive authority in those two departments. Internal audit and audit committee, a second level of assurance, they provided some assurance when it comes to the two departments, and you feel that there's some gaps that need to be closed for them to be able to fully provide assurance as required. Chair, I will move now to financial health, financial management issues relating to the entities in the portfolio. This is where we reflect on the financial viability of the entities. So we start off with the Capital Control Board by indicating that there was a material uncertainty that was disclosed in their financial statements, and this is similar to last year as well. So the entity indicated that they might have issues then in terms of remaining a going concern. And this was mainly then impacted by COVID-19, which had an impact on how the entity generates their revenue because of the closure of their facilities. So, however, there was a mitigation then because the department was able to provide $3 million to the entity after April 2020. This was part of the special adjustments budget, so to try and assist them to remain stable going forward. But in their financial statements, the entity still indicated that they might have challenges with regard to their going concern looking into the future. On the Department of Defense, we again highlight the issue around the ability of the department to afford the compensation of employees' expenditure. And this is mainly due to the budget cuts, and we'll see in the slide on irregular expenditure that they continue then to incur irregular expenditure because they are not able to afford the full salary bill. We also note, Chairperson, that the claims against the department have increased from $4.3 billion to $5.4 billion. We highlight this as well because if the department were to lose these claims, it could significantly impact their cash flows. We also noted, Chair, that as at year end, the department had payables amounting to $114 million, and this amount exceeded what was remaining as voted funds to be surrendered by $108.5 million. So if the department had paid all of these payables within 30 days as required, they would have then incurred unauthorized expenditure. On the DMV side, Chairperson is highlighting that they also have claims which constitute 88.5% of their budget. So again, if they may lose these claims against them, that will have a huge impact on their cash flows in the next year. And they also had accruals stemming from the prior year, which are affecting 2020 budget. And this may also then impact on how they achieve their planned targets for the current year under review. And we also note then that budget cut of $137 million to their 2020-21 budget. Chairperson, I'm going to reflect on the fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by entities in the portfolio for the 19-20 financial year. We also do a comparison with the 18-19 financial year. So the entities incurred fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounting to $19 million. Of that $19 million, $12 million relates to the payments that were made by the Department of Defense for the leased properties that were not utilized. On the right of the screen, we also reflect on whether entities have investigated the cases of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and we highlight that the Department of Defense and DMV have not fully investigated their cases in order to implement consequence management. Irregular expenditure for the portfolio amounted to 2.8 billion for the 1920 financial year, compared to the 3.6 billion for the 1819 financial year. 2.6 billion of this amount relates to the irregular expenditure on the Commission of Employees. As I indicated earlier, that the department exceeded the ceiling for Commission of Employees, and therefore that resulted in irregular expenditure. The balance of the amount relates to non-compliance with procurement processes, particularly in the Department of Defense. Again, we reflect on the investigations that were done to deal with irregular expenditure, and again highlight that UOP and DMV have not properly investigated the instances in order to implement consequence management. On supply chain management findings, which Chairperson, there was no improvement in terms of the reduction in findings reported. And these findings mainly relate to the Department of Defense and are highlighted as well in their audit report. We also then singled out the five ones, which is mainly the non-compliance when the department was procuring goods and services with a value above 500,000. As well as those below 500,000. They also did not comply when it came to confirming the tax matters of the suppliers prior to awarding them the contracts. There were also cases where they evaluated bidders on a criteria or evaluation that differed from the one that was advertised for those quotations or bids. There were also some instances where the preference point system was not applied in the procurement of goods and services above 30,000 in contravention of the requirements. We also look at investigations into allegations of fraud or SCM misconduct, and these apply to the two departments. We also just highlighted that these investigations are taking much longer to be completed, and that they mainly relate to the instances that are caused by non-compliance to procurement processes. Chairperson, I will now reflect on the key expansion of our mandate, which talks to the amendments to the Public Audit Act. So these amendments were effective from the 1st of April 2019. We phased in the implementation starting from the 18-19 financial year, and the Department of Defense was part of that phasing in for this process of material irregularities. For the current year under review 19-20, we also then added Arms Corps to this process. So we had two entities in the portfolio that were forming part of the material irregularity process. Just to explain, Chairperson, the material irregularity concept that came out of these amendments means that as we are doing our work in terms of the Public Audit Act, we extend our work to look at the transactions in a more deeper manner to look out for possible financial losses that were incurred by the entity as a result of those irregularities that we identify. So we do not stop at non-compliance, but we scrutinize the transactions further to see whether there was a financial loss incurred by the entity. So if we do identify a material irregularity, we inform the accounting officer immediately, so that they can indicate how then they are going to deal with that material irregularity or if they are dealing with a material irregularity, what processes are they putting in place? So the accounting officer is given 20 days within which to respond with their submission on the steps that they are taking to deal with the material irregularity. If they respond and indicate the steps that they are implementing, and we evaluate them and are happy that they are dealing with a material irregularity, we then wait for them to implement, and then we assess afterwards to see whether the matter was dealt with adequately. If they don't deal with the material irregularity, we then decide on the way forward, and that can include including recommendations in the audit report on how they must deal with that material irregularity. If they do not implement the recommendations, we can take then these consequences that are indicated in the slide. We can decide whether we refer that material irregularity to a relevant public body for further investigation. We can also then take binding remedial action if they fail to implement the recommendation for that particular material irregularity. And the last step, if also the remedial actions are not implemented, we can issue a certificate of debt to the accounting officer for that failure to implement the remedial action if there was a financial loss involved. So this isn't just, again, a reflection of the definition of what a material irregularity is. It refers to a non-compliance with or a contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty, which we identify during an audit that is performed under the Public Audit Act. And that irregularity has resulted in or is likely to result in a material financial loss, the misuse or loss of a material public resource, or substantial harm to a public sector institution or the general public. So what this means is that for us to reach a conclusion that there was indeed a material irregularity, there must be an irregularity and there must also be an impact of a material financial loss. Chairperson, like I indicated, we did implement the process of material irregularities in the Department of Defense and the Arms Corps. However, on Arms Corps, there was no material irregularity identified. In the Department of Defense, there were three material irregularities that were identified and communicated to the accounting officer. The first one was already highlighted in the prior year, however, had not yet been fully concluded and therefore was not included in details in the audit report. All of these three material irregularities that we have now are fully detailed in the audit report. The first one relates to an inventory and asset management contract that was awarded, was not awarded to only one bidder that scored the highest points in the evaluation process. This then resulted in the department not complying with the requirements of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act in awarding that contract. So the department then awarded this contract to two bidders at an increased price of 922 million for the same scope of work. So we're saying that by doing so, the non-compliance is then likely to result in a material financial loss to the department. The second material irregularity relates to the lease payments that were made for unoccupied office buildings. We've highlighted the non-compliance in the prior years as well. So this non-compliance has been there for a number of years wherein the department continued to pay for these unoccupied office buildings. So this has resulted in a contravention of Section 45E of the PFMA, and also there's a financial loss of 108 million. The third material irregularity chair talks to a contract that was awarded for the supply and delivery of fuel to a supplier were in the department used a different evaluation criteria than the one that was stipulated in the original request for quotations. This resulted in non-compliance with Treasury regulations, and there was also a material financial loss of $2.6 million as the department had paid a higher price for fuel. So all these three material irregularities, Chairperson, were communicated to the accounting officer, and they were allowed the time to submit on what they were doing to address the material irregularities. For the first material irregularity relating to inventory and asset management, the accounting officer did not take steps to deal with the material irregularity after he was notified. We then decided to include recommendations in the audit report that the accounting officer must implement by the 30th of November 2020. On the second and third material irregularity, the accounting officer has indicated that the matters will be investigated, and that following the outcome of the investigations, the accounting officer will then take action against those that are found responsible for that material irregularity, and also to initiate a process to recover the financial loss from those responsible. Apologies, Chair, just having some challenge with moving the slides. I'd like to just quickly stop sharing. Apologies for that, Chair, and try to start sharing again. There seems to be some challenge with that, the moving of the slides. Okay. Apologies for that. Let me continue, Chair. Well, it seems as you still have a challenge. I'll ask maybe Lawrence to share the slides for me, or one of the colleagues on the call.
Okay. We'll try our best. I don't have the slides with me. Is there any of our other colleagues that's got the slides with them? Otherwise, you can pick them slowly to me.
I will say it.
Thank you.
Apologies for that.
Okay.
I would then move to slide number 24. This slide is just basically a summary of all the outcomes that I've presented today. So I would like to skip this one, which is basically summarizing what I've talked to. I'll move to the root causes. So, having looked at all the outcomes that we presented, we've concluded that these are the main root causes behind the findings reported. The first one is a slow or no response to improving key controls and addressing risk areas. Chairperson, we've seen that some of the findings are recurring from the prior year, and therefore it shows that management did not move with the required agency to deal with the matters that we brought to their attention. The second one is inadequate consequences for poor performance and transgressions against legislation. As I've indicated, the two departments have not done enough in terms of investigating cases of irregularities and wasteful expenditure, and therefore have not been in a position to implement consequence management. In the next slide, Chairperson, we highlight the recommendations that we have made to the department and the entities. So the first one talks to implementation of consequence management. So it's important that they do the investigation and implement consequences, and also to monitor the status of the investigations as they go along, because we've seen that even where investigations are being done, they take longer to be concluded. And you're also indicating that, once again, they must develop and implement audit action plans to address the findings that we are reporting. The next slide, Chair, then reflects on the recommendations that we are making to this committee. The first recommendation talks to the monitoring of the implementation and progress of action plans during your oversight engagements with the entities in the portfolio. So the departments or the entities should then present the progress on how they are implementing the recommendations that we've made to them throughout the financial year. We also request that the committee looks at the transgressors with relation to irregular and wasteful expenditure incurred to monitor the consequence management implemented by the entities in the departments. And in particular, this should also include the issue of material irregularities, because it's important that those be given the attention that is required, and the agency, in some of them, as we've indicated, the date by which the accounting officer must implement the recommendations. Jefferson, I also want to reflect on some of the efforts that we've put in place as the Auditor General to try and assist the entities in improving audit outcomes. The first slide talks to the efforts that we've implemented over the years to try and assist accounting officers or accounting authorities in implementing our recommendations. So we do have regular engagements with the accounting officers to try and assist them in the process of implementing our recommendations. We have also introduced a status of records review, which assists the accounting officer in identifying the gaps or the risky areas that they must close before they submit the financial statements or the annual performance report. We do also share the results or the outcomes of the status of records review with the portfolio committees. We also do roadshows and media briefings. This is at a high level on the outcomes to show the picture to the whole country of where we are in terms of improving audit outcomes. We do have frequent oversight engagements, again, to try and enable oversight to the committees, and there are other initiatives also that are done at coordinating departments like the quota and the treasuries to support, again, these institutions in improving the financial performance of the departments and entities. The next slide, Chairperson, will deal with the preventative controls. This is yet another initiative that the Auditor General has introduced, again, in assisting with oversight. So what we are saying, Chairperson, is that all entities need to implement good preventative controls in order to prevent irregularities and to prevent financial losses, and also to make sure that they are able to produce credible reports. We highlight key processes that are in each and every institution, and we have then prepared or produced preventative guides that touch on all these key processes. We'll make the preventative guides available also to the committee so that you are able to use them as part of your oversight. So all we are saying is that if the entities then are able to build good and strong preventative controls, that will then result in them having a strong control environment which enables the role players like senior management, the accounting officer, internal audit and audit committee to be able to provide the necessary oversight and assurance that is required for their specific roles. However, failure to implement or design the preventative controls will result in those consequences that we are highlighting in red at the bottom. So it could result then in material irregularities and poor audit outcomes. And the consequences that are also unintended, which results from not implementing proper preventative controls, are financial losses, costly investigations, disciplinary processes, as well as litigation, which can affect the entity's performance negatively. On the next slide, we also then reflect on why these guys are important for oversight structures like the portfolio committee. So we're saying that these guys will enable the oversight structures to be able to diagnose the weaknesses in preventative mechanisms and also to focus the oversight on their efforts of obtaining assurance from the accounting officers. So all we are saying is that as a committee, you should be aware of what the good preventative controls are that are required in every environment, and to focus on asking the accounting officers whether they do have those preventative controls in their environment. And where they don't have them, then they should give you assurances of how and when they will be implementing those preventative controls in order to ensure that they are able then to present credible reports and to prevent any non-compliance. In the next slide, we just highlight then this preventative control guide that we are in the process of sharing with you. The first guide talks to the importance of preventative controls to indicate why we are exercising this preventative controls for every environment. The second one talks to the tone and culture that is brought about when an entity is implementing these good preventative controls. We also indicate why it's important then for each and every entity to institutionalize good internal controls. Guide 4 deals with the procurement of goods and services, which, as I've indicated, seems to be a challenge in the public sector entities. So we've got a full guide that talks to the good preventative controls that each entity must implement in their procurement process. 5 deals with preparation of financial statements. Like I indicated, we do focus on whether the entity are able to provide a good quality financial statement. So then we have highlighted also good preventative controls that must be in place to achieve that. And lastly, we've got an asset management guide to also assist entities in implementing controls around asset management and reporting. The last slide, Chair, also just reflects on why it's important then for the committee and also the accounting officers to look at this preventative guide. And I'll stop there, Chairperson. This is our briefing to you. And at this point in time, we'll then take questions or comments. Thank you.
Where am I? Sorry. Colleagues?
Chairperson? Yes. I've tried to use the technology by raising my hand.
Oh, I see. Let me just see.
You asked me the other day why I'm not
there. There's progress, I can see. Right. Okay, so far, let me just recognize the hands. So, no. Am I audible? Yes, I am.
Yes,
right. There's Mr. Mare, Mtembu, Ms. Mtembu, and Ms. Beckers. Let me just check any hands down here. All right, I have 3 hands so far. Mr. Mare, okay. Thank you very much, AG, for your presentation. Well structured and very enlightening. And over to your colleagues.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much to the AG for a really comprehensive report to us. My first observation, Chair, is that again, it seems like previous years and even more this year, there's a major reflection on the quality and the accountability of the DoD management, or must I rather say the lack of that. And it seems like, that might be part of the reason why they have got such a big issue with National Treasury in terms of funding. That might certainly have an impact, and it seems like, the people that we must hold accountable is the SecDef, the chief of the SNDF, and obviously a DoD CFO. So we our work is cut out in terms of that. Let me start by posing some questions. First one is with regards to Arms Corps. While it is fantastic that they've got a clean audit, I just wanted to ask the AG whether they look at, for instance, bonuses, because it seems like they always pay bonuses in respect of, for instance, the 2019-20 year, in the year after that. So how do they then account for that in terms of to the Auditor General with regards to bonuses for a previous year? And I also want to ask the AG with regards to bonuses being paid to the ex-CEO who left the Arms Corps service in, I think, around about September, October 2018, but he was still either paid until the end of the financial year, because that's the only way that he can qualify for bonuses. So those are things that is picked, that I've picked up, and that I just wanted to ask the Auditor General's opinion in that. And then, you know, whether they interact with them with regards to bonuses after, you know, they've got such a reduced service delivery and output, you know, whether it is justified, and whether the fact that they get a clean audit is that adequate reason for bonuses. Then with regards to the Department of Defense, there's a number of issues that is obviously of major concern to me. And the first one is with reference to the material misstatements and reports in that regard. And I want to ask, you know, what happens in this regard? Do they have to report it somewhere? Is it only reported, as they've stated in some of the last slides, for us to monitor and for the DOD to hopefully respond by the next year? Because something needs to be done urgently, and it seems like we've got, you know, serial transgressors in that regard, and because there are no accountability and there's no consequences, obviously, you know, these material misstatements and problems, challenges are repeated. Is it really adequate to only, you know, request monitoring by both, you know, the management plus the portfolio committee? Do you not need more action from us, for instance, to hold them accountable? Because that's a serious issue, and it impacts on the integrity of South Africa in terms of the Constitution, Article 200. Then I want to ask the Auditor General whether they have and whether they do the audit with regards to you know, in normal audit processes, they look at whether you are a going concern, and in terms of future you know, accountability and commitments of the Department of Defense. For instance, you know, when there are contracts like Project Biro, Hotel and Hoof Easter, where there are huge commitments being made, where there are contracts being signed, where project has been, you know, well underway, and it seems like there are no money to pay that, whether they look at that at all, and whether there are any audit findings in that regard. And to what extent, I want to ask, to what extent is the CFO and internal audit responsible and must be held accountable for some of these misstatements and omissions and the lack of internal control? Because these, you know, with the greatest of respect, they are in the service of the DOD for a number of years. They are senior positions, they get the increases on a yearly basis, they get the promotions from time to time, but it seems like, you know, these things are just popping up every single year, and in some cases it's getting worse. Then I touched on you know, what kind of intervention you really require from us, other than just monitoring, because monitoring means that, you know, we will find the same situation next year. and then we will have the same discussion and it will just, you know, go on into the future. Have you looked at any, you know, what is the kind of non-compliance with regards to procurement? We have picked up lately that you have become involved in the investigation with regards to the unauthorized or seems like irregular procurement of medical supplies from Cuba. You know, whether you have looked at that and whether you are also obliged in terms of CRECA to report some of these findings to the National Prosecuting Authority, or does that only apply to private and private sector auditing firms? Then I want to ask about the, you have mentioned about the claims that are outstanding and, you know, the possible danger if those claims are successful. Have you looked at the possible consequence of the legal cost to defend those claims? Because in some cases, the legal cost might be equal to the claims. And just to use an example, Project Spire and Hotel, we know that the penalties in the contracts are probably as much as the outstanding amounts. So whether you've looked at that and whether that, you know, is grounds for increased risk and reporting on this. Chairperson, I think that is about my questions, and you know, maybe I'll ask some more in you know, next round. Thank you very much.
The next person is Ms. Mtembu.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, greetings to you and all members of the committee. Firstly, let me welcome a presentation as well prepared and informative. Chair, I just want to congratulate AMSCO for improving to a clean audit. I understand that getting a clean audit, it needs a strong teamwork.
Yeah.
I also want to encourage all other entities to make sure that they work towards getting a clean audit. And also, I noted, Chair, that there is an amount of 19 million, which is a wasteful expenditure. I'm happy that there is a plan of dealing with that. I was a bit scared that maybe there is no plan to deal with that. And also, I noted that there is a 90.8 million, which is in irregular expenditure. I want to encourage the entity to make sure that they reduce these irregularities, and also to have a concrete plan to deal with them. For now, Chair, let me pause there. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mtembu. Ms. Bickers?
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank the Office of the AG for their presentation, Chair. But, Chair, my first one is that I'm trying to understand the opinion of that they could not find sufficient evidence obtained on goods and services and also on the investment relating to sensitive projects. I want to understand, is it a case of missing documents, absence of documents, or the unavailability of officials to assist with the evidence? It's my first question, Chair. Then my second one, Chair, is that there's claims against the department, that increasing claims against the department, and it influenced the cash flow. So could they establish the status of these claims, Chair? Then my third one, Chair, is on internal controls. I see there's a problem mainly on all areas with internal controls. Does the department have a tool, or is there a process and time frames to monitor the impact of the audit recovery plan. Could the AG establish that also? Is there a plan? There is a plan. But is there a tool to monitor the plan? And then my last one, Chair, is on the submission and the quality of financial statements. What is the view of the Office of the AG? Is there a capacity problem, or is it just that they don't properly prepare those statements? Because...
You are breaking.
Chair?
Yes, you are breaking. Yes, you are now back, okay?
Okay, Chair. My last one, Chair, is on the submission and
yes,
the quality of...
Yes, you may continue.
And of the financial statement. What is the view of the AG? Is it a capacity problem, or is it just that they don't properly prepare those statements? Because they correct it when the problem is identified during the audit. So what is the problem? Is it just that they don't make time, or what is the capacity problem? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. AG, of these three hands so far, may I now invite you to provide some responses.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members for those questions. I will start off by responding to some of the questions, and then Mbali will follow on to cover some of the questions which I haven't addressed. The first questions were with regard to bonuses in Onscore, and the first question basically relates to how does an entity account for bonuses. So Onscore is on the GRAP financial reporting framework, which means that they will have to make a provision in the financial statements for any bonuses if they are planning to pay it. So basically, in practice, there should be a policy which will determine under which circumstances an entity will be paying bonuses, and then it will link to their performance management system, because that will ultimately determine who should be entitled to bonuses. And then, of course, one of the key considerations should be before the accounting authority approves any bonuses is the financial means. Is there funds available in the budget to pay for those bonuses? So in the case of Onscore, then they would have followed those processes, and they would then have made a provision in the financial statements for those bonuses. And and because the services for those bonuses has been delivered in, let's say, in the 1920 financial year, that's why in terms of accounting principles, then that provision is made in the 1920 financial year. However, the actual payment might only happen then in the next financial year. So the ultimate decision to pay or not to pay bonuses rests with the accounting authority. So in this case, with the board of Onscore in terms of their policies. There was a specific question directed at the bonus paid to the former CEO of Onscore. Chairperson, I don't have any specific details at this point in time about such a payment, but I can say that such a payment will also be regulated, first of all, by the policy of Onscore, and secondly, by the employment contract would be up in between the former CEO and Onscore. The next question dealt with, there was a question to say what more can the portfolio committee do. So the committee exercises oversight, so the committee will typically now call in the accounting officer to present the annual report, talk about the audit outcomes, and the committee will then exercise its oversight to asking relevant questions and making sure that management has put, for instance, an audit action plan in place. key also in this is that the portfolio committee should follow up with the accounting officer on whether there's consequence management applied within the entity, because the PFMA ultimately makes provision for consequence management to be applied. Therefore, it's critical that the committee follow up in cases where there's irregular expenditure or transgressions with laws and regulations, whether that consequence management actually takes place. And if you look at, for instance, in the case of the Department of Defense, we have reported in the audit report that we don't find enough evidence that consequence management is actually taking place. There was a question about DOD's going concern status and the project. So to answer that question, we need to just reflect on that slide. There was a specific slide that dealt with the financial affairs of the entities, and in that slide, my colleague explained that in the case of the Department of Defense, due to the budget constraints, there's a challenge every year that there's not enough funds available to pay for the salaries, and therefore the payroll budget is exceeded, and that has now for a number of years resulted in significant irregular expenditure. So that effectively then means that the department does have financial constraints, and that could have a negative impact on the projects. It could mean that at some point in time there might not be enough funds available to continue with the projects in the manner that it was actually planned to do such. So it is important for the committee to also look at that, it's important to manage it from the department side to make sure that they do not suffer any losses and that they do not for the future overcommit in terms of projects for which there will not be funding available in the MTF budget. There was a question about the role of the CFO and internal audit. So the CFO's role is defined in the Treasury regulations. It is specifically defined that the CFO is there to support the accounting officer in the executing of the accounting officer's duties. So a CFO is the key individual in any entity or department. It should, however, be noted that in the case of the Department of Defense, supply chain management is not currently under the control and direction of the CFO. While it's actually a requirement of the Treasury regulations that supply chain management should be under the control of the CFO. So if we look at where the irregular expenditure emanates from, the irregular expenditure emanates mainly from the supply chain management area. So that is something that should be addressed, that the supply chain management should be under the control and direction of the CFO. Internal auditing has got a very important role to play, because the work of internal audit should also be risk-based. So in the case of the Department of Defense, because there were in the past issues with regard to assets and irregular expenditure, those should be two of the key focus areas for internal audit throughout the year, that they should actually be focusing a lot on those areas. I think most probably it would be good for the if the committee would consider to maybe engage with the chairperson of the audit committee, who is directly responsible to control and direct internal audit, to get a bit more insights in terms of the work of internal audit their progress in terms of finalizing the action plan. the audit plan. What we have noted is that not all the planned items on the internal audit plan has been executed, and the reason that was provided to us that it was due to capacity constraint. There was a question about the medicine procured from Cuba. We have audited it. If there's any findings that we deem necessary to be reported, it will be included in the special report, which will be tabled in Parliament soon. And then we do work together with the Fusion Center, which means that in cases where we deem it necessary, we would give the information over to the various role players in the Fusion Center to do further investigations. And we will, of course, assess which of those entities are better positioned to actually look at it. So we do focus also on the non-compliance with laws and regulations, and that's why we also report on the non-compliance with laws and regulations in the audit report. There was a question about the legal costs. So when it comes to the department incurring legal costs in defending legal claims, we do not focus specifically on the cost itself and whether the cost is justifiable or not. That is a function of the accounting officer together with the legal section of the department. What we will do is we will on a selective basis audit the actual cost once it's incurred, and we will audit the reasonability of the of that specific item in the financial statements. Then there was a question for us to just expand a bit on the qualification of that we have in the financial statements on the sensitive projects. So it is not a matter of necessarily that the department is withholding information. So those projects are classified projects and are sensitive projects. So to protect the sensitivity of those projects, it is not possible for the department to make available all the documentation to the auditors because that might compromise national security. That is the reason why we as auditors are saying to the user that we could not necessarily get all the documentation and information in that specific area. So that is, in summary, it's due to the nature of the environment and the sensitivity of the environment. That is the reason why we do not have access to all the Then there's a question about the audit action plan. So it is important that the accounting officer should have an audit action plan. There was a question whether there's a monitoring tool. I will ask Mbali maybe just to respond in a bit more detail. What we do during the audit processes, we do look at the audit action plan. We do review it and to determine whether those actions will actually be addressing the audit findings. It's however management responsibility to make sure that plan is effectively implemented. So I will ask Mbali just to when she responds to maybe give you a bit more detail in terms of monitoring. That's why we also make a recommendation to the portfolio committee, because we also believe that from an oversight point of view, that the committee should on a regular basis engage with the accounting officers and ask them to present those audit action plan and report on the progress against the implementation of those audit action plans. Then there was a question about the accuracy of the financial statements. So currently, besides the qualification that we have on the sensitive projects, the other qualification in DOD then deals with the completeness of irregular expenditure. So what is very important is that this qualification came about the first time last year, and it is because we've identified a irregular expenditure in the DOD environment. And we have requested management then to go back to the various supply chain management transactions, review it themselves, identify the irregular expenditure, and disclose it in the financial statements. Management has, however, not done it for last year. They have also not improved on the controls, and therefore we have identified, again, cases of irregular expenditure in this year, to the extent that we believe that the irregular expenditure as disclosed in the financial statements could be materially misstated. So for this to be corrected, the Secretary of Defense will have to review 2 years transactions, supply chain management transactions in the department to identify any irregular expenditure, disclose it, and then take all necessary action in terms of the PFMA, including consequence management. Thank you, Chair. I will hand over to Mbali then just maybe to add on in certain areas that I am might have.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will just maybe assist on the question on the action plans, whether there is a monitoring tool that is used by the department to assess the progress on action plans. I'm not aware of a specific tool that is used by management. However, the CFO does report back on the implementation of action plans in the audit committee meetings, wherein you reflect on progress made by the department to address the issues, especially the significant issues that are highlighted in their action plan. So that is done on a quarterly basis. But it remains then the accounting officer's responsibility as well to ensure that that status that is being reported is actually what is happening on the ground, that the matters are actually being addressed. Then there was a question on the status of the claims that we are referring to that are disclosed in Note 18 to the financial statements. So, as indicated then under that note, the matters are still under, they are in court, basically. So the department is defending those matters because they feel that they can win those claims. There's some of the cases, the one in particular has been ongoing for a number of years and is still not yet finalized. So yes, the department has incurred some legal fees from those claims. However, they are significant amounts, so they are defending them, and at this point in time, the matters are not yet concluded in the courts. So that's why they remain then disclosed as potential outflows that may result in the event that the department does lose the cases. So overall, the amount is 5.4 billion relating to those claims that is indicated in the financial statements. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry, colleagues, I was muted. I can see one more hand, Mr. Shilden. Thank you so much, Bali.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, one must appreciate, the report as presented. Anyway, it is what is happening in the department, and as we always talk about in our meetings, the portfolio. But, Chairperson, I'm just checking, on the side of the AG, if maybe they can help with some possible solutions. I'm just looking to the issue. I know that there are some concerns, I think, between the DOD and the Department of National Treasury in regard to the operation within the department. Because, if what we are seeing today has presented to us as it is exactly what is happening in the department. You know, for the National Treasurer to consider a request from the DOD in terms of assisting, we might experience some challenges. For instance, currently we are talking about 2.6 billion irregular expenditure, which is caused by the increase of compensation of employees, you know, without the national authority in the DOD. Now, something to happen until a solution is found. What is the possible solution in this regard? Because it's something that we are going to experience in the next financial year, the issue of, the increase on the compensation of employees. According to them, are we in a time where the department will have to consider changing, the budget itself when it comes to the staff and also when it comes to maintenance or capital expenditure or asset or something? Because the formula, the issue of the 40-30-30, it seems, is not currently working for the department now. And the issue of irregular expenditure coming again, it's like we are failing to come with a solution. And we can't just leave it like that. I'm just checking to the office of the AG if there are any proposed possible solution to that problem, because the National Treasurer seems not to be, considering a request from the DOD to have more funds to compensate the employees. And then two, the issue, of the claims against, the DMV, you know, is seen to be constituting 88.5%, and then this seems to be like now taking the next year's budget. But my concern is that if, the budget of the DMV has been cut down by 137 million because of the COVID-19. Now, that these, are the excuses that are being given that have. So what do we do now? Because it means now from now, the department is going to experience a very, very, big problem, because this is going to affect the issues of the service delivery in the department, especially when it comes to the issue of the bursaries, medical, and the issue of, a pension, housing, all that will be affected if we don't have the solution. How do we move out from this solution as a department? If maybe the AG, I know that their responsibility is to present the status of the report to us, but also if maybe they think that something must be done. I'm also looking to the issue now, say, of the material irregularity that is taking place. For instance, when you go to the issue of the inventory and asset management, there is a clear statement that the accounting officer has not taken action in response to, the report being given to him that there is a irregularity in that. But now they say the accounting officer has not taken an action. Now, if the position of the accounting officer is the highest position, in the department. Now, if he has not done that, what does it mean to us as a portfolio committee? Just checking now to the office of the AG, what does that mean? Because it's clear that he has not done it, and he has been told, but nothing has been done. So now, what is that we as a portfolio committee can do or, react on what is happening right now? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. No, I will come back to you.
Okay, thank you.
I note you. Let me join Ms. Honorable Mthembu. Alice Mthembu, commending CCB for achieving a clean audit. I would say just well done, but we'll convey that when we meet with them. We hope they will sustain this trajectory. And then, two, I noted the presentation by the AG's office that the department, if they had paid the amounts due to be paid on time within 30 days, within the 30-day period, and they would have overspent their budget by 108 million rand. That would have constituted an unauthorized expenditure. So because they did not pay this 108 million rand in 2019-2020, it means that it will be paid out of the current budget, 2020 and 2021. Is the opening balance, for this financial year. So it means that the budget we appropriated to the department for 2020-2021 is down, is reduced by 108 million rand, which is an amount that was due and payable in the last financial year that they did not pay. So we take note of that. And I also take note of the fact that in both DOD and DMV, the management is not responding with the required agents to the call of addressing risk and improving internal control. That's a statement of that's a statement from the AG's office. It's poor reflection on the department's performance. It's a department that controls over 55 billion rand, but is still exhibiting these weaknesses. And it explains why the issues of irregular expenditure is not going to be addressed. I've asked Brian to beam up so that you can see the irregular expenditure in the department. And the report of the AG points out to weak internal controls in the department, and if it continues as it continues, they would continue to struggle to prevent non-compliance. So that's a serious indictment. And I don't know what to say on this fruitless and wasteful expenditure. This office that remains unoccupied. I think this is, I don't know, a third day or fourth day, if I'm not mistaken. 12 million rand that we are paying to the landlord for an office that we are not occupying. It means that there was no need in the first place to sign that lease agreement with the landlord. What is happening? And if there was any need for it, the department would not have, you know, would have addressed this and cleared this wasteful, fruitless and wasteful expenditure a long time ago. That they get a qualification on it. So on something that we thought it was within their control. It's just a matter of, guys, we have an office, let's go move and occupy it. So that we eliminate this finding. The finding remains. And I also note that the allegations in respect of fraud and SCM misconduct and 50% in respect of both departments, DOD and DMV, remain not investigated. And and where there is investigation in the other 50%, and the investigation takes longer than 3 months. So these are serious issues, and that are being raised over the over and above the issues that the colleagues have raised. Yeah, I mean, there is a point that was made by Bali right at the beginning. She says risk areas are not being investigated sufficiently in the department. And because of that, they get a repeat, you know, recurring matters that attract a repeat, what you call, findings. So those are matters that concerns me. I've looked at the structure of the department, and I asked myself that for as long as the structure of the department is the way it is, these problems will persist. How is it possible that SCM, Supply Chain Management, reports to Chief of Logistics, who's not even an accountant, right? But in other environment, SCM will be under a CFO, a chartered accountant. In other departments, I think in most departments, and that's the first structural problem in the Department of Defense. And the second one is risk. Risk is housed in planning under Dr. Kamet. And you have SCM sitting elsewhere, risk sitting elsewhere, and I think internal audit is somewhere else. And then we think these problems will be resolved. I think I would expect AG to comment. I mean, you at least you have a transversal look. You can tell us whether what I raise as what I find unique in this department is in actual fact a correct assessment, where SCM would be under somebody, SCM would be Chief Logistics, who's not even an accountant, and not within the CFO, and you have risk sitting somewhere else, and I think it's internal controls, I think it's independent. And I think I would want you just to comment on the structure, because it will tell me whether what we are chasing is not a mirage. But I will wait to hear from you. Brian, can you beam up the report? I want to bring these few pages to the attention of members so that they think about them when we meet with the department. Are you ready, Brian?
Can I just say I fully support your observations. I think you've taken it well into your hands, and I mean those are the essence, and I absolutely fully support you in your concerns and what you have raised there.
Thank you so much, Mr. Murray. Let me also, just before I look at the report, what is before me, and there's a page in the report where the internal audit is giving us their report. Right? Internal audit says, this is what the internal audit says. Internal audit, so they're reading, the internal audit findings revealed certain weaknesses which were brought to the attention of the accounting office. One, there were instances where officials were acting in positions without approved delegations. Two, there were payments made for office buildings that were not occupied by the department. Three, in some instance, monthly lease payment were higher than the contract price. I mean, how is it possible? Is there internal audit? And four,
standard operating procedures or guidelines relating to financial reporting of accruals could not be provided by some units. 5. Non-submission of accrual inputs for financial statements. 6. There were instances where there was no proper segregation of duties in some procurement units. 7. There are no proper skills transfer plans to take over from the service providers. 8. The risk committee does not consist of external independent members. These are the findings of their internal audit committee. So, but besides that point, let's also give them due credit where it is due. They've cleared some matters that were, a problem, a perennial problem in the department. And if it was not this committee's stance on some of these matters, I can tell you they will still be in the report of the Auditor General. Let me just cite one example. I'll cite all of them. Movable, tangible capital assets. This the disclosure. The department did not disclose capital work in progress for projects under development in accordance with the modified cash standards charter. All right, and this, the first day of reporting was in 2016-2017. It continued, the same report was in 2017-2018-2019 until you said this must come to an end. It has come to an end. And this is a report of the AG. I think this is a report of the accounting office, I think. The required disclosures have been made, audited by the AG with no findings. The qualification is resolved. Thank you very much to the department for resolving this issue on capital work in progress. And then the second one, it's, I think let's go to, just move up, Brian. This was the second one again. Inadequate record management systems and some of the assets not being readily available for verification. As a result, I was unable to determine whether any adjustment were necessary to the intangible assets stated at 4.9 billion rand. And then, but this one again has been resolved, this issue of intangible assets. Now the department, the required disclosures and adjustments have been made and audited by the Auditor General. Again, this was a repeat finding from 16, 17, 18, and 18, 19, until you said no, that has come to an end. And then this one, again, it's reappearing today, it's recurring. It's the sensitive, it's the sensitive projects that the AG says they are unable to obtain sufficient appropriate evidence, audit evidence regarding sensitive projects and the and related investment due to the sensitivity of the environment and the circumstances under which the related transactions were incurred and recorded. All right. Consequently, I'm unable to determine whether any adjustments were necessary to sensitive project expenditure included within the expenditure of 12.8 billion rand. And of course this one continues, it's again a repeat finding. Yes, go down. Irregular expenditure, it's, in other words, there are two findings in the main, is the sensitive projects and the irregular findings. The rest have in some way been cleared.
The department did not record irregular expenditure in notes to the financial statements as required by Section 40, subsection 3.1 of the PFMA. This was due to inadequate systems to detect, record, and appropriately disclose this expenditure in the financial statement. Consequently, I'm unable to determine the full extent of the irregular expenditure stated at 5.1 billion to the financial statement, as it was impractical to do so. It's reappearing. This was 1819 when the AG was saying this. I'm not going to read something. I mean, the department says SCM practitioners, this was they were actually saying, SCM practitioners are being trained. I mean, this thing, the first year of reporting was in 1617. In 1819, because this was said in the early this year, when they were responding to the 1819 AG's findings. They are saying SCM practitioners are being trained to ensure that they are consistencies in the disqualification of suppliers who do not meet the minimum criteria, and the awarding of contracts are being done in terms of existing policy. But the operating word here, SCM practitioners are being trained. And the DOD has established an oversight committee to monitor the DOD procurement entities across the country where the findings occurred, and intensifying the effective functioning of the bid committees and the bid evaluation committees. The CFO committee with the chiefs, the CFO comes in, is not responsible for SCM. Now they are mentioning the name CFO here. The CFO is meeting with the chiefs of services and divisions on a continuous basis to deal with the recurring findings in the SCM environment. The CFO has no control of the SCM processes. Boards of inquiries and investigations are in process to effectively manage consequences. You see? And let's go. Commitments. Let's go down. Commitments. All right. This one on commitments has also been resolved. In 2018, financial year, the department did not maintain adequate records of the contractual information used to determine commitments. And on the right, the response of the department in consultation with AMSCO works continuously to ensure the completeness of projects, to ensure that the requirements of commitments are accounted for. Discussions have also been held with the DP, Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and AG's office to ensure that endowment properties, where possible obligations exist for the DOD are accounted for. This has been resolved. So this was recurring from 2017, 2018. Can you go to, I said I would take you to the irregular expenditure. Brian, can you go to page, I'll tell you now, which is 356 of 415. All right. You're almost there. All right, go down. Go down. 356. Go down a bit. Go down. Yes. All right. These are claims. Sorry, these are claims claims against the department. The colleagues spoke about the claims from the department, and the AG replied that the matter is receiving attention. The department and AMSCO are defending it out there, but she decries the legal fees that they may be involved in the matter. And the claim against the special defense accounts relates to a commission claim of someone is asking for a commission. I think the AG
they would clarify this for me because they deal with these terms. Of euro 192 million euros with a real value of 3.7 billion rand. And in 2018-2019 was 3.1 billion. Am I reading it correct? That the rent value of 2018-2019 is 3.1. And so the 2019-2020 is 3.7. So that the matter is being defended, okay? And then the new claim at the bottom, it's a new claim registered against the SDA relates to a claim of 17.6 million euros with a rent value of 344 million rand. And the AMSCO has entered a notice of intention to defend and filed an exception in terms of the court rules following the amendment of the particulars. I'm sure the committee may want to get more information on this. Well, I just go down to irregular expenditures, note 19. Go down, yeah, we're almost there, go down. I think it's note 24, go down. 24. All right. This is irregular expenditure that was reported today, and 24.1, the opening balance was a carryover from 2018-2019 financial year. The closing balance of the 2018-2019 financial year became an opening balance in 2019-20 was 5.1 billion rand, just of irregular expenditure. And this year, irregular expenditure relating to this year is 3.3 billion rand. Relating to prior year. Sorry, was relating to prior year. Is that, how much is this? 3 million rand, 3.3 million rand, and add irregular expenditure relating to the current year, which is 2.8 billion rand. And the total irregular expenditure is 7.9 billion rand. What really concerns me are the steps that they are taking to deal with the irregular expenditure. Let's go down a bit. Just go down. 24.2, yeah. Go down, just open the whole, put it, that, okay, sure. Details of current and prior irregular expenditure and they added to the current year. And the incidents are on the left and you can see investigation in progress. The first one, the contract price of the first one was, I think, 1.3 million rand. And the second one, four unfair bidding process. And the non-compliance with the PPPFA, the contract price was 171.9 million rand. And let's go. And there's one below, expenditure above. Okay, this expenditure above the above COE allocation. This we understand, which is 2.6. Billion rand. But I'm saying the committee must monitor progress in respect of these investigations. But there's a point AG is raising that the department did not disclose all irregular expenditure, that some were discovered during the audit. That made AG to say, look, just go back and do an investigation and disclose all irregular expenses. What is recorded in this report It's not a full disclosure, as per the AG's comment. Colleagues, I thought I should just raise these matters, and because our matters, amongst others, that this committee must follow up. Right? And AG, you respond to Mr. Schellenberg's comment, and you just comment on the structural deficiencies that I picked up, and you may also just reflect on what I said in passing, and because the rest is matters to be followed up by the committee. And then Mr. Marais will then comment. I think he is then the last person to comment before I invite you to reply. That will then take us to the end of the meeting. Mr. Marais?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mr. Lawrence, just a follow-up on what you have responded. I just wanted to know, do you have to report in terms of PECA? I know that you have said that you will report to other, you know, bodies maybe, but does PECA applies to you? And then secondly, you know, the projects or the plan, you refer to plans going into the future in terms of cash flow and viability. What I refer to is projects, is contracts. So in other words, it's already a continuous, you know, obligation. And we know that the first vessels under Project Biro must be delivered and will be delivered early in 2021. So if the Defence Force and the Department is not in a position to pay for the delivery of that vessel, you know, then obviously government guarantees will kick in, which might have a more severe impact on not only the Department, but then also National Treasury and government in terms of those guarantees. I just wanted to get your clarity that I make sure that I understand your response in terms of that. Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. Colleagues, I guess we are done. I don't see any other hand. All right. I now invite you, Mr. AG's office, Mr. Van Feren, to see how you allocate the questions. How about you, sir?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. On the financial health of the department, our role and mandate does not extend beyond reporting on financial health risks. So once we've reported that, it is then in the hands of the accounting officer and National Treasury to then deal with the budget allocations and the priorities. So our responsibility is just to highlight those specific risks. And it's true that with COVID-19 there was a reprioritization that was needed on both DOD's budget, on most of the budgets, DMV as well, that could in the short and even in the longer term have an impact on the projects of the various entities, but due to the constraints in funds, they had to reprioritize to be able to cover the costs for COVID-19. Jefferson, you raised a number of questions around supply chain management and risk management, and I would like to respond as follows. So there's various models that can be applied in any environment on risk management. I want to refer you to a specific treasury regulation, which I think the committee should can take guidance from. So the treasury regulation 3.2.1 determines as follows. It says the accounting officer must ensure that a risk assessment is conducted regularly to identify emerging risks of the institution. A risk management strategy, which must include a fraud prevention plan, must be used to direct the internal audit effort and priority, and to determine the skills required of managers and staff to improve controls and to manage these risks. The strategy must be clearly communicated to all officials to ensure that the risk management strategy is incorporated into the language and culture of the institution.
Well, that gives overall guidance, and it's actually a regulation which actually says that those are the principles which an accounting officer must endorse and then follow when he deals with risk management. And you can clearly see the link with internal audit. And if you then look at the other regulations that deals with internal audit, it gives much more guidance in terms of what is the responsibility of internal audit. And then as I've indicated, and you also mentioned it, the regulation 16 is then also quite clear to say that the supply chain management system must be under the control of the CFO. That is the how I would respond to those questions. So there was questions asked about the claims against the department. I would respectfully recommend that the committee engage with the accounting officer on those claims. Some of them have got a long history to it, and I think it's the committee needs more information on that. It would be the best for management to actually explain to the committee what resulted in those claims, and what is the current status of those claims, and what is the department actually doing to manage those claims. The honourable member asked again a question about the projects. So on the projects, it is the risk is that if there is not financial resources made available to pay any supplier at the point in time that supplier needs to be paid, it could result in other risks for the department. For instance, non-delivery or even penalties in terms of contractual agreements. And therefore, it's very important that that in the budget the funds are available as and when the payments need to be made for these various projects. In terms of the reporting, in terms of Chairperson, we report in terms of the Public Audit Act. So and we've also followed the principles of what we call NOTLA, non-compliance with laws and regulations. So in other words, we will, as you see, in the audit reports report on certain non-compliance that we deem necessary. If there's other non-compliance that we identify, we will report it to the relevant authority that is best placed to investigate it could be various institutions that we would be reporting to, whoever's got the mandate to regulate a specific environment.
Okay. Colleagues, thank you.
Chair,
yes.
Hello,
is that?
Chair, I just wanted to maybe reflect on other comments or questions that were made. There was a question or comment around the material irregularity that was raised, wherein it was indicated that the accounting officer has not taken action. So it is a material irregularity on the asset management contract. And yes, we have reported as such in our audit report that the accounting officer, when he was informed of the material irregularity, did not take actions to deal with it at the time. So we then informed the accounting officer of the recommendations that need to be implemented. So what is important therefore for this committee is to follow up during your oversight meetings with the department on the progress that has been made to implement those recommendations that we included in the audit report. And there was also a comment around the unoccupied office buildings that has also resulted in a material irregularity, Chair, which is also being investigated by the accounting officer. It is also important that the committee, when they meet with the department, also then follows up on the progress that is being made, because there is a material financial loss that is flagged of 108 million resulting from those payments that were made for unoccupied buildings. So I just wanted to highlight those two items, Chairperson, because it's the first time that we are reporting material irregularities in the audit report,
and it is required that as part of oversight, you also follow up on these matters to make sure that the accounting officer is dealing with them decisively and within the timelines. Thank you.
Yes, no, thanks, Fadi. Just go back to the 108 million rand with respect to the rental, the amount you are paying towards the landlord for the office that we're not occupying. You see, if it is 12 million rand this year, must I then read it that it's been around this figure, over the last few years? If the answer is yes, it's how long this these offices have not been occupied.
Thank you, Chair. So the offices were rented around 2015-16, and from then they were not occupied. So what happened is that in the 2019-20 financial year and the year prior to that, they started occupying some of the buildings. And then in 1920, they occupied then all of the buildings. But it was later in the year, so they had already incurred this rental of 12 million. So prior to 1920, there was already 96 million that was incurred in rental payments once the buildings were not occupied. So we added then the 96 million plus the 12 million that was incurred in the current financial year to get to 108 million that we are reporting as a material financial loss, which then must be investigated as exhibited relative in a material irregularity. Thanks, Chair.
Oh, thank you so much. So we can take comfort now that the building is from this financial year is fully occupied.
That's correct, Chair.
Thank you so much. All right. Okay, colleagues, it now takes me to the end and of our meeting. I want to believe all our questions were answered or replied to in that way. It leaves me with one thing, to thank the Office of the AG for sharpening our oversight. Ideally, it plays at the center of parliamentary oversight. Without it, it would be difficult to get to this level of detail. We thank you for living up to our expectation, and with that, thank you so much. We'll interact with you, from time to time. And when must we expect the report? I think there's a question Mr. Mara raised of the when are we releasing the CPE audit report? I noticed that the one in September did not have any findings in respect of the of the OD, and but even with in respect of other departments, it was still a preliminary report. In the hope that the November one, that's what we promised, would produce a semi-final or a complete report, unless they are still spending on PEEs. What is the situation? Are they still spending on PEEs? In which case, the report would be preliminary until they've closed the spending on PEEs. What is the situation? How do you treat this one, if I may know?
Thank you, Chairperson. So we are planning to table the second special report in the next week or so. What I suggest we do is that, so once that report has been tabled, that we then engage with the committee on the contents of that report as far as it relates to the Department of Defense. We can then, because in the report we will articulate a lot of information on the spending, and we can then provide the committee with more information on the expenditure to date, and then at least the committee more.
Okay, can we have you on the next week? What are we meeting? No, next week on the 6th. You might not have released the. Next week is Wednesday. You might not have released the report. No, you will have released.
Possibly the first week in December, sir. We are still meeting on that day.
Yes, that's what I'm asking. We're meeting Brian on the 3rd or on the 6th? On the 6th, Brian. Brian, it's on the 3rd.
We're meeting on the 2nd, sir.
On the 2nd. Would that report be released on the 2nd?
Chair, I think it might just be soon after that.
Soon after that.
Yeah.
So okay. We might not meet then until next day. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, can I just ask, given that information, will it still be made available to us, or do we have to then wait for next year? Because then it's old news, if I can use that phrase. If it can be made available, and I mean, you know, I'm sure once we get the report, you know, we can then decide whether we want to apply for a special committee meeting. That'll be up to you. To liaise with the chair of chairs, but I mean, at least if we have got the report, then we can apply our minds.
All right. I think let me just rephrase your question. The report will be published. I think maybe is it possible to get the segment relating to the defense committee and send to the committee, Mr. Van Rijn? So that we don't have to go through the whole thing to get it, just to get our own segment of the report. In other words, that speaks to the departments that we oversight.
Chair, once it's been tabled, we will take out just the section that deals with DOD. We will give it to the committee secretariat to make available to yourselves. And as soon as possible, then we will also prepare a presentation for you, which we will also make available to the secretariat. And then, as soon as you are ready, you can engage with.
I think you have answered, Mr. Mare. Mare, are you happy with this? Probably that.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for your time. The meeting is adjourned. Frank, are we fine? Can we adjourn the meeting? We have completed the items of the agenda.